Articles of Faith is a weekly interview show featuring scholars and writers who have written about the doctrines and teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Articles of Faith is a production of Fair Mormon and is hosted by Nick Galletti.
Neil Rapley is a student at Utah Valley University working towards a bachelor's in history with a minor in political science. He is a volunteer with Fair Mormon, an editorial consultant with The Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, and co-recipient of the 2013 John Taylor Defender of the Faith Award. His main research interests are the foundational events in early Latter-day Saint history and the ancient origins of the Book of Mormon. He blogs about Latter-day Saint topics at, and you're going to have to spell the domain for me.
Well, it's studio at Quoque Fide.
Which is like the easiest thing to spell,
right? Of course it is. It's actually my Latin translation of by study and also by faith.
Okay. Well, there you go. We'll have a link to the posting of this episode if you would like to go check that out. But you won the John Taylor Defender of the Faith Award in 2013. Now, for those that don't know, that's an award that's handed out by Fair Mormon each year at their annual conference. This year's conference is actually coming up in about a week and a half. Do you, as a past winner, have any predictions on who might get to the vote for this year's award?
To be honest with you, I have no idea. And they don't make me privy to those decisions.
No predictions. Well, that's all right. No 2 years in a row, though.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, this might seem like kind of a fundamental question relating to your article that we'll get into in a little bit, the article you wrote for The Interpreter, which is called War of Words and Tumult of Opinions, The Battle for Joseph Smith's Words in the Book of Mormon Geography, So let's ask this kind of umbrella question. Why does the geographic location of the Book of Mormon matter?
Well, that's a good question, and you'll hear a lot of people say that it doesn't matter. And to a certain extent, I think they're right. I think you can definitely be a good Latter-day Saint, and you can be a good believer, and you can have a strong testimony in the Book of Mormon without knowing a single thing about the geography of the Book of Mormon. But for me, I'm a history major, and I like to study the scriptures from a perspective of history. And in order to do that, you really need to have a context and a setting within which to study it. And in order to, in order to do that for the Book of Mormon, we've got to figure out where it happened.
Why do you need to know where it happened? Isn't it sufficient to know that it just happened?
That's what a lot of people think. And for, yes, it is. But at the same time, if I wanted to dig into it historically and culturally, like I would do with the Old Testament, for instance. And, what I find amusing almost is that we never hear this question asked about the Bible. Everyone takes for granted that we have maps of where the biblical events took place. And they take for granted that knowing that and knowing the cultural context and the historical context to those events is beneficial to our understanding of the text. But then when it comes to the Book of Mormon, suddenly we think completely differently for some reason.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly. It doesn't matter, again, like I said, in the sense of gaining a testimony. But it does matter if you really want to understand the history and the cultural context and things like that. And I'm not going to stand up and say that I know all of that. But I do think that as we ponder those questions, as we dig into those questions, we can begin to piece some things together and some things that make a lot of sense, at least to me, and really help us better understand the text and its context.
I can definitely attest to that in the sense that I have been to church historical sites, Nauvoo and Sacred Grove, and I've even been to biblical sites like in Ephesus and things like that. And somehow, maybe even inexplicably, those stories and those experiences have more meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not sure why,
but
they just do. And perhaps there's something to those experiences with the Book of Mormon as well.
Well, yeah, I certainly think they are. And, it can be a touchy subject because there is this acrimonious debate over where, and some people are financially tied up into it doing tours in different locations. To try and give us that sense of place, as you're talking about, and feeling like, I'm standing here where this happened. And so I understand why lots of people do want to stay out of it, but I think you're absolutely right. I think being able to put it on a map and being able to say this is where things happened really can give us a stronger sense of connection to the text.
It's more real.
Yeah, exactly.
And you bring up this idea, though, that, again, Book of Mormon geography, it's one of those issues where it seems there's such disagreement or even discord at times. There's even so much, I would even be willing to say that there's as much discord about the subject inside the church as there is outside the church, which makes it kind of a unique subject in that way. But I have a quote here that I found in the preface of a book by Thomas Stuart Ferguson, a book entitled Kimura Ware. The actual introduction was written by Elder John Witzo, and this comes from that introduction. He says, quote, "If we misconstrue geography of the Book of Mormon, we may make an entirely consistent record appear inconsistent with itself. Worthwhile persons may be dissuaded by our own errors." Is Elder Widso's warning coming to pass?
It could be. I do think that it can be important. The way we interpret the Book of Mormon is very important when it comes to geography. And poor interpretation will help us build on a poor foundation. And if we build on a poor foundation, it could be damaging to testimonies, and it could be harmful in that respect. Not that I want to shut down debate over the issue, but I do think that the nature of the debate needs to be respectable, and it needs to be respectful. And I think even the nature of the debate can put people off and do damage where we need to be building faith. If we're not respectful and we're not, you know, not only checking those we disagree with for their accuracy, but not checking ourselves for accuracy and making sure we are not building on poor assumptions and poor interpretations that will lead to poor arguments and poor evidence.
Well, the foundation we have officially from the church was a recent Gospel Topics article where they essentially reaffirmed the position that the church isn't taking a stand on where it took place, and that, in fact, any assertions beyond that are merely opinion. But still, we still have different groups of people, rather, looking to Joseph Smith, of course, the book's originator, translator, however, you know, conduit, however you want to describe it,
right,
as the person to look for as the geographic authority. And I understand that. That makes perfect sense in a lot of ways, because he is that foundational prophet, and if he had something to say about it, it's something worth looking at. So with your article, though, again called War of Words and Tumult of Opinions, The Battle for Joseph Smith's Words in Book of Mormon Geography, is in The Interpreter, and you bring up a variety of different issues in this argument, but it's really under the context of a review,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
Why don't you take it from there and explain what your article is?
Well, I was asked to review John Lund's book on Joseph Smith and the geography of the Book of Mormon. And it was something that, as I looked at it, I realized that this was part of a larger discussion about what Joseph Smith did or didn't say about Book of Mormon geography. And it was part of a larger discussion about methods that should be followed in doing Book of Mormon geography. And I really wanted to bring that larger discussion into play now. Lund really focuses a lot on these articles in the Times and Seasons, where there's been a lot of dispute over who really wrote them and who's the responsible editor and author of those articles.
Well, and that's because these articles assert what?
Well, because they assert that Zarahemla and Book of Mormon events happened in Central America and Guatemala, which at the time basically embraced all of Central America, that was the political boundaries there. You know, that's really largely why there's a controversy. I don't think any historian would have ever questioned who wrote these unless they were motivated for one reason or another to either assign Joseph Smith as the author of these articles and thus give them a greater sense of authority than they otherwise would have, or to distance Joseph Smith from them and thus give them less authority than they otherwise might have. And so what I see going on is most the argument is largely motivated by the biases of people and their desires to advocate for one setting or another for the Book of Mormon. And then depending on which setting they want to advocate for, you can generally predict who they're going to say wrote those articles.
Yeah. Well, and your article, I guess, addresses the Book of Mormon geography, but not necessarily in the advancement of a particular theory.
Right.
But it is to kind of go after the John Lund's writings. But there's another side to this. There's two parties here that your article deals with,
mm-hmm.
and that is the main two parties that you say are kind of this polar opposite in how they view the Times and Seasons articles or really any evidences that point to Joseph Smith stating his opinion that the Book of Mormon took place in Central America. So who is this other side?
Well, the other side is generally represented by Rod Meldrum of the Firm Foundation. And he has he advocates rather that the Book of Mormon took place in what he calls the heartland of the United States, building his model largely around the Mississippi River as the River Sidon. And he insists quite strongly that Joseph Smith knew where the Book of Mormon took place and that he knew that by revelation. And he has a number of sources that he likes to use to make that assertion. And he obviously does not like to believe that Joseph Smith wrote these Times and Seasons articles precisely because they are problematic for that point of view that Joseph Smith knew by revelation that it was in this heartland area that he advocates for. So he tries to distance Joseph Smith from those articles as much as he can.
So as you go through your article, you're essentially taking the arguments from both sides and reconciling them?
Not necessarily. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to look at what we can actually tell based on both the history and John Lund's book, for all of its weaknesses, I think one of its strengths is it does provide us a lot of the historical background that we need to look at this question. So I'm trying to look at that history, and I'm trying to look at some other studies that have been done, some recent statistical studies that have been done to try and determine the authorship of these articles. And as I try and piece that together, what I see is a very convincing picture emerging that Joseph Smith did, in fact, write those articles. But I also see a very convincing picture emerging that Joseph Smith didn't, in fact, have any revelation confirming anything about where the Book of Mormon geography took place. And so, to me, it starts to become a moot point. Well, Joseph Smith had some opinions on Book of Mormon geography, and he could be taken as a model for how to study this. He's trying to, if you look at the Times and Seasons articles and some of his other statements, he's looking at different evidence, and he's trying to compare it to the Book of Mormon and see what we can actually find.
What fits and what doesn't.
Right. And so he could maybe be taken as a model, but his opinions, in my opinion, should be treated just as that, as opinions that should be evaluated.
You actually give a quote from Matthew Roper, who did some research for the Maxwell Institute on some of these same claims.
Uh-huh.
The quote that you give is, "The preponderance of evidence does not support the claim that Joseph Smith's revelations included details about Book of Mormon geography, but rather suggests that this, as with many other questions, was an issue in which Joseph Smith, as time allowed him to give it attention, followed the dictates of his own judgment and expressed his own opinion." So, what are some of the things that bring you to that conclusion?
Well, a lot of what brings me to that conclusion is analysis that Roper has done specifically on the sources that others have used. To me, a lot of the other primary sources, outside the Times and Seasons articles, there really isn't a lot that explicitly identifies specific cities or lands of the Book of Mormon. There's a few things. There's a statement, I want to say it's Samuel Tyler, but I'm not 100% sure, but it's in a journal about the location of Manti. And Meldrum and his followers will like to assign that to Joseph Smith because it identifies Manti as in Randolph County, which is just south of where they say Zarahemla is. But Roper has shown in two different articles, actually, that this is pretty—it's pretty thin ice. It's not something that we can directly associate with Joseph Smith. And in fact, there's a contradicting account of where that information came from, and I can't remember the exact details on that. But Roper has shown that that's not really something we can tie to Joseph Smith. Other things that we have, you know, the Wentworth letter— I feel like they like to use that because Joseph Smith uses the phrase "this continent" in that letter, and I think they're really stretching, or this country maybe is what he
says. No, he says this continent.
This continent, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like they're really stretching and trying to get a lot of mileage out of that, you know, that little phrase and a few other little allusions that aren't really there. There's really nothing there about the geography specifically of the Book of Mormon. Probably their best piece of information is the Zelf Mound incident, and I think there's good reasons to be very cautious about using that. Not the least of which is the fact that Zelf is not actually an explicit character in the Book of Mormon, and the fact that we have multiple different accounts there, and it's been a very difficult. Historians have spent a lot of time looking at the 6 or 7 different accounts, I can't remember exactly how many there are, and trying to piece together what actually was said by Joseph Smith. Are we sure that something like that happened? Yes, we've got enough documentation to be sure of that. What exactly was said, we can't be too sure of because all the accounts are so different. We need to be very careful about assigning that any value with the Book of Mormon geography. And those are, you know, there's probably some other sources that get involved, but those are really the bread and butter there of their case. And I don't think that there's a lot of weight that we can hang on them.
Well, there's two real different angles here that are kind of at play. You describe them as prophetic priority and geographic priority.
Mm-hmm.
And these are kind of the two competing themes, I guess, as you go through your article and you discuss Lund's, you know, you review Lund's work and you review it up against Meldrum's work. What are these two different priorities and how do they apply to Book of Mormon geography?
Well, what I mean by those different priorities is the priority of evidence. And the prophetic priority are people like both Lund and Meldrum, actually, who believe that the words of Joseph Smith or the prophecies and promises in the Book of Mormon or the words of some other prophet, it really doesn't matter. Somebody who's given prophetic authority, their words should take precedent over all other evidence when it comes to the Book of Mormon and its geography. And so that's where they go to first for their evidence, and that is the determinative evidence that they use to define the general region that Book of Mormon geography took place. And that priority is problematic precisely because we don't have any real genuine prophetic information on the topic. The geographic priority, on the other hand, starts with what information we have in the text about the geography. When Mormon or another author is describing details about their physical setting, we want to gather that information up as much as we can. And it starts there, and then we are able to look at that information and try and compare it to the real world and the geography of the Americas and find a region that best fits that description. And for me, that's the best approach to take, because Mormon and Moroni and the other authors of the Book of Mormon, they're the ones who were really there. They're the ones who really knew what the geography was like. We don't have to wonder about whether any of their statements are revelation. They didn't need revelation to know the geography. They knew it. They were there. And so their statements need to be our first evidence.
So geographic priority places that text and their words above what the prophet says. From my perspective, I have to wonder why there's a conflict.
Well, I think there's a conflict precisely because Joseph Smith didn't have revelation on the topic. And to me, I know a lot of people are uncomfortable with seeing a conflict between what the prophets in the Book of Mormon said and with what Joseph Smith said on this topic. But for me, it stands as striking evidence that Joseph Smith didn't actually write the book. If the things he's saying about Book of Mormon geography are not consistent with what the text says about Book of Mormon geography, could he really have written the book? I mean, if he's the author, he should know the geography like the back of his hand, because that's how he'd have to know it to have dictated the text as rapidly and quickly as he did.
Sure.
And yet have a consistent geography. Yet we find that when we look at statements that are from Joseph Smith or potentially from Joseph Smith, and we try to square them with the text itself, they are not consistent. And It just goes to show, like I said, Joseph Smith didn't have revelation on the topic. What Joseph Smith did have revelation on was far more important than the Book of Mormon geography. He was obviously interested in it and trying to study it out, but the complete and full rigorous study of the text and its geographic statements hadn't come yet. So he made some guesses and they were wrong. But that doesn't make him any less of a prophet. In fact, like I said, I think that makes him more of a prophet because it shows that the text he produced did not come from his own mind.
Well, and one of the other things that you bring into play to help kind of look at these times and seasons statements, which, as you said, has been kind of the real linchpin here and how these things are coming together or not, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You call it stylometrics.
Yes.
So it's one of those interesting points that seems to almost be kind of a litmus test for your for someone's views on Book of Mormon geography. So can you explain what that is and how both sides of the issue are kind of using that?
Well, stylometrics is the method of using statistical analysis to try and determine the authorship of something. And I'm not a statistical expert by any stretch. In my political science minor, I've had to do some political analysis and some statistical analysis of political issues, but not a lot. So I know a little bit about statistics, but I don't know a lot. But I've done a lot of reading on stylometrics. And it is, like I said, there are certain types of indicators. Usually they like to use non-contextual words, words that we don't consciously choose necessarily, and, but, of, things like that, which can emerge as a pattern within a person's writings. And that pattern can then be compared against writings which are of unknown authorship. Usually what we like to do is we like to see someone who has demonstrated that their method of doing this, and there's lots of different statistical methods for determining authorship. It's not this monolithic process. But usually we like to see a method for doing that demonstrated to be accurate above 90, 95% of the time. And that's done by taking things that we know who the author was and testing them to see if our method can determine can correctly identify the authorship of various pieces of writing.
Is it like verbal DNA?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. It's
not that accurate.
Sometimes some people like to call it word printing because it's okay. Like a verbal
like a fingerprint.
Word. Yeah, fingerprint. But even then, that's, you know, a fingerprint's unique to every single individual, and we can occasionally get confused. You know, the tests are not 100% accurate. But we do like to, like I said, you like to see a method demonstrated to be accurate above 90, 95%. And from a statistician's point of view, that's pretty locked in and pretty sound if you can demonstrate that kind of accuracy.
And what's been demonstrated in this case?
In this case, there's been two different statistical studies on these articles. One of them was done by Lund, and that was the kind of the crux of his book was his study. And what I found as I was going through his study and thinking about the things he was saying is you really couldn't be too sure how accurate his study was. There were some really interesting things that pointed to Joseph Smith's authorship in there, but there were also some problems with his method that I noticed. And the biggest problem was there was no demonstration of the accuracy. There was no control group where he tested his candidate author's writings to see if his indicators could really decipher the authorship of an article and if they could do it at a high rate. And he would make lots of comments about the mathematical improbabilities, but he would never actually demonstrate what those improbabilities are. He'd never give us a solid number.
Gotcha.
To say, okay, this is the probability that we have here. The other study was led by Matt Roper and Paul J. Fields and another guy whose name escapes me right now. But they've been doing lots of word printing on the Book of Mormon right now, and they also did these word printings on the Times and Seasons articles. And Paul Fields is a professional researcher who works a lot with statistics, and so he really knows what he's doing with this kind of stuff. And their study was demonstrated to be able to accurately identify the author of writing between Joseph Smith, John Taylor, and Wilford Woodruff, who are our three candidates for writing these articles. They could accurately determine the author at over 98%. And so this was a very reliable method that they used. And they found that they tested the Central American articles from the Times and Seasons, the ones that identify the Book of Mormon taking place in Guatemala. And they also tested the other articles from the Times and Seasons separately, not mixing them, to determine authorship during Joseph Smith's period as editor. And what they found was that ones signed explicitly by Joseph Smith were clearly written by Joseph Smith. They also found that those that were unsigned or signed as editor also were most like Joseph Smith's writing style. And then they found that the Central American articles that talk about the Book of Mormon also were closest to Joseph Smith's authorial signature, if you will.
His fingerprint.
His fingerprint, exactly. And so their data really strongly suggests that Joseph Smith was either the author or the primary author. There were some indications that John Taylor may have assisted in writing those, but that makes sense. He was the assistant editor to Joseph Smith. But the evidence really strongly suggested from their study that Joseph Smith was the primary author of these editorials.
So all in all, if you were to kind of put a conclusion on what your review of John Lund's work and Rod Meldrum's work is, how would you conclude it?
Well, I would conclude that Lund makes some good contributions to our understanding of the authorship of these articles. And supplemented with Matt Roper's work on the same topic, I think we have a very clear picture that Joseph Smith wrote those articles, and at the very least, he knew what those articles were saying, and he did not ever contradict them.
So at this point, the overriding opinion is that Joseph Smith made these statements that Guatemala was the location.
Yes, and you know, in my opinion, the burden of proof is now on Rod Meldrum and others who want to dispute that, to critique the studies that have been done, to provide alternative data that can support their conclusion that Joseph Smith did not write them. And that's where I think it really rests right now. At present, with the data being what it is, it's a big blow to what Rod Meldrum wants to insist, because like I said, it's not just that he thinks the Book of Mormon took place in a certain area. That's fine, because like I said, I think Joseph Smith's opinions are just that. The problem is that he wants to insist that Joseph Smith declared by revelation that area that he wants us to believe is the geography of the Book of Mormon, the heartland. The problem is he says that Joseph Smith said he knew that by revelation. And if the evidence suggests that Joseph Smith actually wrote these articles placing the Book of Mormon somewhere else, that's a big problem for what Meldrum wants to do and what he wants to claim. And so, like I said, he's got a burden of proof at this point to either concede the argument or to provide alternative analysis and data that can provide a different conclusion.
But ultimately, what we're still dealing with is opinion.
Well, yes, that is ultimately what we're always going to be dealing with. But in my opinion, of course,
dismiss opinion entirely.
I think a 98% probability is a really strong opinion. There is always the chance. There's that slim chance that that short excerpt was just happened to be one of those things that is misidentified. But that happens less than 2% of the time with the method that Roper and his colleagues used. So that's not something I'm going to bet on.
Well, let's take this now down to a level of the average Latter-day Saint that may come across this information, may say, hey, I'm hearing this thing from Rod Meldrum, and it sounds spiritually relevant to me. I should listen to the prophets. And he makes a fairly convincing argument, albeit loaded with suppositions, an argument that sounds very convincing on the surface that this is the right way to look at it. And then you hear this other evidence that feels very differently and comes to very different conclusions and seems to be more rationally justified. So what then do you say to the person that sees these two things and kind of wants to know where to throw their hat?
Well, the first thing I tell them is if it really bothers them that much, then just don't worry about throwing your hat anywhere. You know?
Well, that's what the church's statement says.
Right. If you really can't decide, it's not that important to decide, which is, if you really want to study the Book of Mormon in a historical context, though, like I have suggested, which is what I enjoy to do, and if you really, really want to know, or if for whatever reason it bothers you to not know, then my advice would be to try and evaluate those claims on both sides as critically as you can, because the church has come out neutral. And because we have no revelation on the topic, we need to use our critical thinking skills here. And we need to approach the problem as rigorously as we can. That's not everybody's cup of tea. And again, that would be my advice, is if that's not your cup of tea, then just don't worry about it. Study the Book of Mormon, get the spiritual value that you can from it, learn the life lessons that you can from it, and don't worry about all of this other stuff. But if this is what you want to get into, if you want to get into historical and geographical questions, then you have to be willing to engage them from a critical thinking point of view, because the church isn't giving us any guidance there.
You wrote an article that could be construed as attacking both sides. I hope you didn't lose any friends in writing the article.
I haven't so far, not that I'm aware of.
Well, Neil Rapley is the author of the article War of Words and Tumult of Opinions, The Battle for Joseph Smith's Words in Book of Mormon Geography, found in the Interpreter at mormoninterpreter.com. Thank you very much, Neil, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Articles of Faith with your host, Nick Galletti. This has been a production of Fair Mormon. This and other podcasts are available at fairmormon.org. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of Fair Mormon or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes. Questions or comments can be sent to podcast@fairmormon.org. Tune in each Monday for another episode of Articles of Faith. Thank you for listening.